On today's Bill of the Flatter Show, episode 107, Disuse, Pauline's, The Social Swim, and Mushroom Soup. All of this and more. The Flatter Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatter Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Welcome to the Flatter Show. I'm Kenty, your host. Jose, my co-host, is taking a nap. He's back to normal, napping and eating and crapping. But Jose right now is curled up in a tight little ball, dreaming of you, no doubt, feeding him biscuits. Welcome to the Flatter Show once more. You can reach me, let me get this away, at 206-984-3617. My last show, in every instance that I mentioned the phone number, I gave the wrong phone number. So if you called, I apologize that you got the wrong phone number. So it is 206-984-3617. It's the K7 number. You can leave a voice comment. I'll get it in my email and I'll play it on the show. I'd love to hear your feedback and be part of the conversation. You know, you can be part of the conversation too. Because y'all know that I love you, right? And I want to hear from you and I want to meet you and, you know, sit down and talk with you and whatever. Some news here before we start the show. The iTunes review, I want to thank my listeners who have already gone in and put their review on the iTunes for me. I appreciate it very much. I got a couple this week. So I would ask my listeners who haven't done so to go to iTunes if you have iTunes. If not, go get yourself iTunes. Go to iTunes and please write a review of the Flatter Show. I'd appreciate it very much. And, you know, I'm a, what do you call it? I'm all for honesty, so. Damn that low-calorie carbonated beverage. It's delicious. Second is, I want to confess that I'm a lazy speaker. I want to make a confession here. I'm a lazy speaker. I've noticed, and I have known this, but I'm making a more concerted effort to change, to become more responsible in my language. I sometimes will say things on the show, and I'll start something, and it sort of just drops off, and I don't finish my sentence. And I've noticed this more and more. I don't know if there's something neurologically, you know, wrong in my brain, or if it's that I'm just lazy, or what is going on. But what I'm doing is, since I've taken a class in public speaking, it was a seminar, basically, and I got some techniques to help me to be better at public speaking, ways of attacking the issue so that I'm making sure that I'm communicating what I want to communicate. Because that is the end result of media, right? Well, maybe not media, but that's my result. That's what I want. I want to communicate something, right? I'm not just sitting here. I mean, I want to communicate. Basically, this is my audio blog, so I want to communicate what is going on in my life. I also don't want it to become – I want to get better because I know I listen to my show and I notice there are things I think to myself, I really need to like talk about – I need to go back and explain certain things I say because I know what I was thinking but I didn't say it. You know, I sort of assume I'm too oblique. That's one thing I'd like to continue for the Flatter Show to be implicit and oblique, but I'm going to also be more explicit and try to, explicit in finishing my sentences, basically. I want to keep the rawness of the filet show. I don't want to edit it so much that it loses this personal touch, because I believe this is what it is like friends talking over drinks or at a restaurant, you know, over food, you know. Well, I have my low calorie carbonated beverage right now. What are you drinking? And notice how I don't mention any brands. The reason why, let me tell you something about that. The reason why I don't mention Tab anymore, people are probably thinking, you were making money from Tab and they stopped giving you money. That's not the case at all. The reason why, it just became, I got bored with it. I mean, originally it was, you know, because of the not pink flamingos, polyester with Edith Massey, Tab for our diet. And that's where I got it from. All those many moons ago. But I still want to have the opening can, because I think that's unique to the Filetus show. And so a low-calorie carbonated beverage is fine. I don't drink Tab anymore. Actually, and one reason why is I can't drink Tab anymore, because actually I probably would still use the Tab if it had no caffeine. But caffeine does a number on my anxiety. I'm sure it does a number on – it's a dangerous chemical. Caffeine is probably as dangerous as nicotine, except it probably doesn't cause cancer. So I have a low-calorie carbonated caffeine-free beverage, and I decided not to mention any kind of brand because, you know, whatever. I think it's – I like that sort of generic quality about it. If you're interested in finding out what I'm actually drinking, you can email me at flatusshow@gmail.com or call me at 206-984-3617. Let me know how I can get in touch with you, and I will let you know what I'm drinking. So, that's it about my confessions as a lazy speaker. The third point here on my list, the third, is Creative Commons. My show, I'm trying to make my shows completely Creative Commons, some rights reserved. I have the license on my show notes. Okay, it's out there. The thing is, I perform songs on my ukulele. I admit, some of them, you know, are probably not in the, are probably, you know, still copyrighted or whatever, regardless of how long ago they were written, okay? So, I have to say this. If you're interested in using parts of my show, let me know, especially if it's a song, and I'll let you know what I think. My performance is Creative Commons, okay? So, I still want to be recognized for my performance. That's what it is. I mean, I'm not pimping, you know, other people's stuff, though I do play clips occasionally. So, call me. Contact me before you do anything. I think that's part of my copyright anyway. I want to know before you do anything with it. Like all the people are going to be knocking down the doors using my show. But anyway, PodCamp Boston, the fourth part of my PodCamp Boston. I'm going to PodCamp Boston. It's in October. And whoever is going to be in Boston during that time, that's how I'm. Hold on. Can you give me a minute here? Hold on. Give me a moment. Come on. Christ. Okay, where's the thing here? Okay, pause. I'm back. PodCamp Boston. I didn't even look it up. I should have, while I was pausing here, I should have looked it up. I'll do that right now. PodCamp Boston. Some New York people are coming to PodCamp Boston. Chef Mark from the Remarkable Mark podcast. I don't listen to that podcast. I have to say. But I like to meet him because I think it looks really good. The show looks really good. But oh, here it is. Day one. Are you registered? Oh, it's 2006 PodCamp. I want the 2007 PodCamp Boston. Anyway, it's at the Convention Center in Boston. This is not very well organized. It's Saturday, October 27th to Sunday, October 28th. I thought it was Friday. So it's only 2 days. That is good for me. Good.
So, okay, good. So it's October 27th to October 28th. Maybe I will stay overnight. Maybe I'll get a hotel room.
Okay, I'll look into that. So it's free to go, and there's tons of people there. So if you want to go, I'll be there at the PodCamp Boston in October.
Okay? It's a good thing. If there's a PodCamp in your area, you should go to it. Number five, Facebook. You should join Facebook because I like it. I think it's really neat. It's better than MySpace. And it's like MySpace for adults. But you can still be a kid on it, I guess. But anyway, I joined a group called Stop Transphobia. And I have become one of the number one recruiters for this. How that happened, I don't know. Because I send out invitations to people to join the causes that strike my, you know, fancy. Things I believe in. You know, I do believe you should, I mean, any kind of phobia, you know, should be stopped. But transphobia in particular. Because I have trans friends, you know, and I care for them. So, stop transphobia. So please join it. So, Rebecca Nay, what do you think about that? I am a leader in having people join the Stop Transphobia club or group on Facebook. Did I say? Okay, I already said Confessions of a Lazy Speaker. So listen, that's it. And I'm going to bid you adieu and on with the show.
Oh, little Audrey says, save for rainy days. She says, but every time it rains, she spends what she puts away. She knows her proverbs A to Z and knows the good they bring.
But when she has to follow them,
well, that's another thing. Oh, little Audrey says, is out, make hay. Though she's not immense, there's a lot of sense in what little Audrey has to say.
Once upon a time, all the children in little Audrey's neighborhood were taking lessons. It was the proper thing to do. If you did not take lessons, you simply were not in the social swim. So little Audrey cried and cried, because she was not taking lessons. After a while, her mama said, "Little Audrey, if you will just stop that bawling, I'll let you take lessons." That made little Audrey awful happy. So she sat down to think about what kind of lessons she would take. Well, after a long time, she decided to take parachute lessons. So little Audrey practiced and practiced, and after a while, it was time to give her recital. You know, if you take lessons, you just have to give recitals. Well, people came from far and near to see little Audrey parachute jump. She went way up high in the airplane and got ready to jump. She looked down and saw all those people watching her, and then she jumped out. On her way down, she just laughed and laughed, because she knew she was going to fool those people. She didn't have on her parachute. The most popular way to cook pasta is al dente. And al dente means that the pasta is firm but not hard and has tooth. I had a friend's father, they were Italian family, and he was very particular about how pasta should be cooked, and he wanted it done al dente. And he's like, it shouldn't be mushy, you know, and he had this thing about it. It's against the tooth. I think that's what al dente means in Italian. It's a resistance, a spring to the pasta. And just like that, the spring to the pasta, this resistance, the same thing goes for resistance training, you know, weight training. And in weight training exercises, you need to pick the proper weight for your muscle to actually to do any good for your muscle. Now, we all start at a certain strength, and it's important to figure out which weight that we can pick up to perform a particular exercise in the set reps and in the set of sets and repetitions.
if you don't know already, when you are weight training, when you're exercising with weights, exercises are set up in a way, right? Each exercise works a different muscle group or a set of muscle groups that, you know, work together. There are some exercises which combine different muscle groups. But when you're reading, when you're trying to figure out what the exercise program means, the exercises are what you have to do is given in the number of sets and repetitions within the sets. So, for example, you'll have an exercise for your biceps, let's say. You pick up a dumbbell, and it says to do 3 sets of 8 repetitions. Sorry about that. 3 sets of 8 repetitions, and that is what you're to do, right? What that means is that you have to pick a weight, right, where you can successfully complete 8 repetitions in a set, pause, that means you put the weight down, rest a minute, pick it up again, do another set of 8 repetitions, pause and rest, and the third set of 8 repetitions. You need to do it in perfect form and with this weight. So what happens generally, and this is something that you have to work out, so when you have to consider this if you consider weight training. When you start, you have to try to find the weights that you actually can do, you know, the weights you can complete in that turn. So the thing, what is the right word? It is easy, I should say. Let me say it, put it this way. It is easy to pick too light of a weight because in the beginning, your muscles, if you haven't trained before, if you haven't done any exercises, your muscles will feel any kind of resistance. So it's easy to pick up a lighter weight and to do your exercises, right? And, you know, you're done. You're thinking, oh boy, I'm doing exercise. I can feel it, you know. And the first week, you know, you're a little sore. So you're going, oh, I'm doing good, right? But that's not the case. You will feel sore for the first few weeks, but that goes away quickly as your muscles adapt. And it is important to monitor the weight you're using and actually, and very much so, watch your form because that's important too. So you have to, as you progress in your exercise, you have to change your expectations of what al dente means for you, for your muscle, you know? It's not always going to remain the same. For pasta, the al dente is always going to be 8 minutes in the water or whatever, you know, whatever pasta you choose, you know, you can time it basically scientifically. With the body, it can be scientific too. In fact, there is a science behind weight training and choosing the right weights, but there are many more parameters in determining which weights to choose. And the fact is that you are responsible for monitoring that yourself, unless you, you know, have a trainer, which is very expensive. So, you know, unless you want to shell out all that money, you know, you have to do it yourself. And for the most part, bodybuilding or weight training is, you should be self-motivated, you know? So I would suggest that if you do exercise, go for the heavier weight. I mean, don't make sure you're still doing the exercise in the proper form, but if it says go for the heavier weight and try to achieve the number of repetitions in the sets that they say. It's been my experience that I'll pick a heavier weight and I won't be able to necessarily complete the entire set, but I go, you know, I try as hard as I can to complete it in good form. The next time, I know that that weight is heavy enough for me to challenge me, and so I go, the next time I go to the gym, I pick that weight and I try to complete the repetitions in each set as stated. And when I get to that point, then I know that I need to increase my weight. And I increase it either by, depending on the whether it's dumbbells or the barbells, by either 2.5 pounds or no, 5 pounds, by 5 pounds, basically. Actually for both. But with barbells, you have a little bit more flexibility because they're smaller things you can put on the
lighter
weights you can put on the barbells. Excuse me. So basically, just be aware of the weight you're lifting. Try to lift a little heavier. Challenge yourself. Otherwise, your muscles won't grow, and you won't have the benefits of weight training, which is increased strength and tone, and generally you'll look a lot better.
Life is very rough and tumble for a humble disuse. One can betray one's troubles, never, whatever occurs. Night after night, have to look bright, whether you're well or ill. People must laugh their fill. You mustn't sleep till dawn comes creeping. Though I never really grumble, life's a jumble indeed. And in my efforts to succeed, I've had to formulate a creed. I believe in doing what I can, in crying when I must, in laughing when I choose. Hey-o, if love were all, I should be lonely. I believe the more you love a man, the more you give your trust, the more you're bound to lose. Although when shadows fall, I think if only somebody splendid really needed me, someone affectionate and dear, cares would be ended if I knew that he wanted to have me near. But I believe that since my life began, the most I've had is just a talent to amuse. Hey-o, if love were all, though life buffets me obscenely, yet serenely goes on. Although I question its conclusion, illusion is gone. Frequently I put a bit by, save for a rainy day. Nobody here can say to what indeed the years are leading. Fate may often treat me meanly, but I keenly pursue a little mirage in the blue. Determination helps me through. I believe in doing what I can, in crying when I must, in laughing when I choose. Hey-ho, if love were all, I should be lonely. I believe the more you love a man, the more you give your trust, the more you're bound to lose. Although when shadows fall, I think if only somebody splendid really needed me, someone affectionate and dear. Cares would be ended if I knew that he wanted to have me near. But I believe that since my life began, the most I've had is just a talent to amuse. Hey-ho, if love were all.
This is Tim.
And this is Nanette.
From For Whatever Reason, and you're listening to The Flatus Show with Kenty.
And Jose.
Several weeks ago, I mentioned the Abraham Foxman and the Anti-Defamation League in light of the position on the Armenian genocide. Basically, the ADL did not recognize it. The head of the Boston chapter did recognize it and was fired for doing so. And he has since been reinstated in his position. But this all revolves around Abraham Foxman. And I wanted to talk about him, and I wanted to talk about the ADL and what I said. The Anti-Defamation League, this is from Wikipedia, is an advocacy group founded by B'nai B'rith in the United States, whose stated aim is to stop, by appeals to reason and conscience, and if necessary, by appeals to law, the defamation of the Jewish people. Its ultimate purpose is to secure justice and fair treatment to all citizens alike, and to put an end forever to unjust and unfair discrimination against and ridicule of any sect or body of citizens. It was founded in 1913 by Sigmund Livingston, the ADL's charter states. So that's basically the Anti-Defamation League. I believe, its first and foremost job is to root out the defaming of Jewish people, okay? That's what I believe. Though, I mean, they do take up other causes in light of it, and I think sister causes, because one symptom of this, defamation of Jewish people occurs elsewhere. I mean, against gays, it's really bigotry and against people, I guess. Okay, but let me just go on. That's what I was saying about it. It's a Jewish organization. Of course, it's going to be focused on the Holocaust and Jewish, all things Jewish, okay? That's where it started. It's not, that's okay. That's a fine thing. It's a fine thing, and I think it's a fine organization. Though I do question why it took them so long to recognize that the Armenians, there was a genocide against the Armenians. And it wasn't just the Christian Armenians either. It was Armenians. All Armenians. So let's start with Abraham Foxman, since he is the head of the ADL. He was born in Poland to Jewish parents, and he's the only son of Joseph and Helen. That's the Jewish parents. It says Jewish parents. I'm reading this right from Wikipedia. That's who he was born to. Foxman had a Polish Catholic nanny who saved him from the Holocaust in 1940. She had him baptized into the Roman Catholic Church, and he was raised Catholic until he was reunited with his parents in 1944. Most of the members of his family were murdered in German concentration camps. It says here, citation needed. So apparently, according to Wikipedia standards, that hasn't been proven. But it is believable. I don't know if it's true or not, but I mean, you can't really trust anything on Wikipedia. I mean, to a certain extent, if you know it's true, I guess you can trust it, right? But I mean, I don't know the details, right? I didn't read, you know, I only go so far in my research, okay? I already talked about that, grain of salt. I'm trying to get better at my presentation. Hope I am doing fine. Hope I am finishing my thoughts. It is an eye opener to find ways of looking at your communication. Anyway, I'll probably talk about what I'm talking about now. See, I'm rambling on. Okay, so let me get on with Foxman. Okay. As I was saying, it's hard when I start reading stuff and then when I want to talk, okay? Most of his families were murdered in German concentration camps. Foxman's father supported Vladimir Jabotinsky, founder of Revisionist Zionism. I've talked about Zionism on this show before. Revisionist Zionism is a nationalist tendency within the Zionist movement. The ideology was developed by Zev Jabotinsky, who advocated a revision of the practical Zionism of David Ben-Gurion and Chaim Weizmann, which was focused on independent settlement of Eretz Israel. Revisionist Zionism was instead centered on a vision of political Zionism, which Jabotinsky regarded as following the legacy of Theodor Herzl, the founder of modern political Zionism. Ideas of Zionism go back, I think, as early as the 1830s. I mean, certainly before that, but you can start cooking with gas in the 1830s, and it's between... Who is it between? You have it's British people, because I think they were in. I don't know if they were in Israel at that time, but it started in Britain.
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
I mean Europe, but I mean something to do with Britain. I forget. Go back and listen to my show. I think it's called "Read the Lease." Okay, so in the early years and under Jabotinsky's leadership, revisionist Zionism was focused on gaining British aid for settlement. Later, revisionist groups independent of Jabotinsky's leadership conducted campaigns of violence against the British authorities in Palestine to drive them out and establish a Jewish state. A defining point I want to talk about is Eretz Israel. Okay. Eretz Israel means the land of Israel and is a term and concept in Jewish thought concerning what is considered to be This isn't boring, okay? I don't know why I yawn. I don't know. I'm having some tea, so I know. Okay. Okay, let me start over again. The land, Eretz Israel, land of Israel, is a term and concept in Jewish thought concerning what is considered to be the historic and divinely ordained given territory of the Jewish people. Now, in the Old Testament, God, okay, let's see here. After Noah, what happened? Okay, after Noah, we get up to Joseph. Okay, yeah, everybody's living around. Then there's Joseph and the multicolored coat guy. He ends up in Egypt. and he becomes important there. And Joseph's family ends up in Egypt too. And eventually, all the Jews end up in Egypt. And over time, they become slaves of Egyptians, okay? That is until Moses. And Moses, you know, was born of, you know, a Hebrew slave. We all know the Ten Commandments. The movie, I mean. Charlton Heston standing up on that rock. Anyway, he was a Jewish guy. He was a Jewish guy. But, you know, you could argue that he really wasn't. He was born to a Jewish... I mean, this is all considering what Judaism is, the sort of genetic makeup of Jews, okay? I heard... Okay, let me just make an aside here. The other day, I was listening to a program, and there was a rabbi on. A rabbi who was a friend of the Pope Benedict, the new Pope. And I think Pope Benedict is a total asshole. I won't mince words. He's the kind of person who brings back iron clothing. He wants to bring back the Reformation. He makes Catholicism seem scary and medieval. And maybe that's the way he likes it. He has his eyes and that German demeanor. Not to make fun of Germans, because I'm partly German. But, you know, if the stereotype fits, anyway. So this guy was saying, this Jewish rabbi, unless there's another type of rabbi, the rabbi was saying, I forget his name, that Judaism is not based on genetics, that anybody can become a Jew, and that Judaism is a religion. And that, you know, anybody can become a Jew, okay? Fine. I know there are people who convert to Judaism. At the same time, I know from knowing Jewish people that a lot of the idea is that you're born Jewish. It's sort of like the idea that for, like, Muslim people, when they have babies, they're automatically Muslim, okay? With Christians... You're not automatically a Christian when you're born to your family. You might be raised in a Christian home, but you're not automatically a Christian. That's something else. So where am I going with this? So here we have, okay, yeah, about Moses. I mean, he was raised basically by the Egyptians, right? So he had this Egyptian mentality. But God talked to him, and anyway, he led the Jews out of Egypt, and they... roam the desert for 40 years. Now, all this time in the Old Testament, the Jewish people, the Israelites, because they don't mention Jewish people specifically, the verb or the adjective, I mean, Jewish, doesn't show up until the Babylonian times, okay, in Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. And then they talk about Jews and Jewish people. But all this time, it's the Israelites, okay? Moses was an Israelite, okay? And he wandered the desert, and he had his people, and they had the golden calf, so God was upset. Moses dies. They're promised land, and they're given the coordinates. Joshua ends up taking them in there and killing everybody. It's God's command to kill everybody in those lands so the Israelites can take over it. So that's the land that that's the land of Israel, this land that is divinely ordained. Now, personally, I think it's kind of suspect how they got their land anyway. I mean, I don't know if God was whispering in their ear, but to kill everybody seems a little bit severe. But of course, we're talking about biblical times, okay? And they actually did not end up killing everybody because they saved Rahab, the prostitute who helped Joshua's spies to get the lowdown in Jericho, the city of Jericho. And then there were other people in the area who got wind of what was happening and sort of like bowed down to the Israelites. But, you know, they didn't kill those either. But they should have, because that's what God said. Okay. So where am I going here? Oh, yeah, this whole idea of the Jewish land, I just think, in a modern sense, it scandalizes me. that we have even gotten this far. I think that it's – I feel bad – okay, this is my idea. Okay, I'm going to go now aside about what I think of Israel. Israel is here. Fine. It's a democracy. It is very good, okay? Well, I shouldn't say very good because, I mean, you know, everybody has a few skeletons in the closet. I'm sure Israel's just like everybody else. But, I mean, it is a democracy in the Middle East. And I like, you know, the Hebrew language. I mean, here, I mean, if it hadn't been for Israel, I mean, there, you know, it's like the Hebrew language wasn't lost, but it has become since become richer and fuller, or actual used language amongst people. That's what my – I think that's what my Hebrew teacher said when I was in college. Because they had to make up words for like things like ice cream. There's no biblical word for ice cream, you know. So it was really interesting how she told me about how learning Hebrew when she was a young girl. So she must have been there around the same time Israel was – created. She talked about, let me just say a little aside about Israel, about this woman, who's this teacher. Her and her husband ran the Hebrew department at Temple University in the 80s, 83, well, at least 83. I don't know how long. Forget her name, but her name meant deer, D-E-E-R in Hebrew. And so she remembers being around the table, and kids had to learn how to read Hebrew upside down and backwards because there was only one book that was so poor, and the kids were all around the table. So if you were on the far side away from your teacher, you had to be able to read the Hebrew, you know, back upside down and backwards, basically. Well, not backwards, because, and I'm not referring to this to the fact that you read Hebrew from right to left. I'm referring to the way the paper is positioned on the table and you're looking at it. So that really impressed me that, you know, she did that. So of the Jewish people I have met from Israel, they're warm and wonderful people, you know. I mean, I think, you know, that's their country, you know, that's fine, you know. And I think it's, you know, it's a good thing to exist. It annoys me, right, in a sense that it's the same land that the Bible says, because then you get creeps. You get these born-again Christians thinking about the end times. You have I don't know. I just think it's irrational, okay? I can get into that later. I mean, I don't want to – I understand where the born-again Christians are coming from. I don't think that anybody can determine the end of time. I don't think there's any prophecy in the Bible that talks about today specifically as a historical fact, like a pre. It's not describing any kind of history going on today. Okay, and that's, you know, people argue with me, and that's fine. So if you want to call me at, and I gave you the wrong phone number last week, but three times I did, I was consistent, 206-984-3617, and let me know what you're thinking. Okay. See, I've gone off on this thing about Israel, so yeah, that's the land of Israel. Okay, so you know where we're at? You get a sense of where we're at here? Okay. Foxman, back to Foxman, head of the ADL. He was generally liberal. You know, he's been involved with the ADL since, I think, 65, it said, and he became the leader of the head of the ADL in the 80s. Generally liberal, okay? He was for the Oslo Accords, which was officially called the Declaration of Principles on Interim Self-Government Arrangements, or Declaration of Principles, was a milestone in Israeli-Palestinian relations. It was the first direct face-to-face agreement between Israel and Palestinians. It was the first time that the Palestinians publicly acknowledged Israel's right to exist. Except for Hamas, you know. I think that's Palestinian, isn't it? Those people, they just sit down and they need to be spanked, I will tell you. It was the first time that the Palestinians, okay, Israel's right to exist, because, you know, the Arabs, many Arabs in that, during, you know, when Israel set up home there, Arabs were like, no, for whatever reason. It was also a framework for the future relations between Israel and the anticipated state of Palestine, when all outstanding final status issues between the two states would be addressed and resolved. Controversies. This thing about the Wall Street Journal. Somebody from the Wall Street Journal wanted Abraham Foxman to be fired, or he wanted him to leave the Anti-Defamation League because Foxman was power hungry. Foxman, it says here, Wendisky states, I think you have to offer Abe Foxman an early retirement or flat out fire him. Abe Foxman has become drunk with power, swinging his weight around, knowing he can label anyone who challenges him as an anti-Semitic bigot. I want to get back to that that idea of calling people anti-Semitic bigot to shut them up, because I mean that's a big powerful thing, isn't it? I mean, if you say something, then you're accused of being like Hitler. Well, you know, regardless of what you say, people are going to look at you. Oh, yeah, he's a bigot. You know, because who wants to be like Hitler? You know, that mustache. Okay. The Rich pardon. Okay. Rich was Mark Rich, an international businessman who gave $250,000 to the ADL while Foxman worked for his pardon. He was the guy that President Bill Clinton had pardoned, and Foxman helped him pardon. He was involved with selling oil to the Iranians or something, or doing something, helping the Iranians during I'm doing this from memory here, but you should go to Wikipedia or look into it yourself to verify it, okay? I'm giving you everything. Grain of salt, baby. Grain of salt. He was accused of dealing with the Iranians when he shouldn't have been. We weren't allowed to do any kind of business with Iran after the hostage and all that stuff, hostage crisis. And Mark Rich was making money off of it. I don't know if he was selling arms or whatever. That burns me. I mean, who knows the whole story? He's a rich guy too, Mark Rich. He lives in Switzerland. I think that's awful. However, this is what I like about Abe Foxman. He supports rights for gay rights in America, and that has placed him at odds with Orthodox Jews. So, Abe Foxman, I like you for that. I mean, it's because I'm gay, you know? Okay, so there you go. Yeah, you know, that's the right thing to do. Because gays were right there in the concentration camps, you know. Except our star was a triangle. What'd they do with gay Jewish people? Was it a pink Star of David? Anyway. He's criticized Louis Farrakhan, which is easy enough to do. And that was about the Millions More March. There was a group of black ministers who gathered somewhere. And I heard this. It was this big stadium. And they're talking. They're having I don't know who it was, but I had heard the clip and I had played it. They were going off about gay people. Like, and those faggots, no one, God doesn't want people in their ass and that. And then you hear this, they're saying, you know, you'll be straight for God, right? And they're like, you hear these groups of guys in the back going, yeah, down with the faggots. Basically, I mean, that's the idea you get. And I'm thinking, what the hell is this? You know? What kind of hate rally is this? You know? Oh, I'm telling you, there are some religious freaks out there, and they have hate rallies. You know? It has nothing to do with morals. You see, the thing is, I have, you know, if I'm ambivalent. I'm torn because I mean, if there are some people who claim to be Christian who are against gay rights, right, claiming this biblical thing, I don't want them to be I think they should be able to believe that in their church, but and I don't think there's any kind of hate crime going on. At the same time, there's a thin line here. It can be hateful, and it can lead to actual, you know, damage to gay people and up to murder. Because, I mean, some of these preachers are pretty persuasive to their narrow-minded, listen to me, to their congregation. And you have a young kid who doesn't really know any better. He wants to follow somebody. You know, he's going to go out and bash a few skulls. And you really can hear it in these sermons. I've heard them on the internet. Okay? It's the same kind of defamation which Abe Foxman is against when he talks, when he goes, when he's going on against people like John Mearsheimer and Stephen Walt for their book, The Israel Lobby. He's written a book, Abe Foxman has written a book, Never Again, The Threat of the New Anti-Semitism. He is against, he's a watchdog for instances where a group of people are being demonized, and which can lead to things like the Holocaust. I mean, if you start saying things like the Jews are behind all the banks and people lose their jobs, you know, then, you know, the Jews are going to be demonized, you know. I don't think that's – I haven't heard that. I mean, but you hear it. It's like things like the Jews are behind this or – actually, I haven't heard that. I mean, I've heard it as an example, but I've never really heard it from other people. So, but you know what I mean. That's the kind of anti-defamation that Foxman is against. And it in the book I mentioned, John Mearsheimer and Stephen Walt, The Israel Lobby, he apparently cites some sections where he thinks that they're being anti-Semitic, okay? But he doesn't claim that they're anti-Semites. Mearsheimer and Walt, I heard this on Terry Gross, claim that Abe Foxman, okay, the Israel Lobby is pretty touchy idea here. There is the Israel Lobby in Washington consists of organizations like the Anti-Defamation League, but also includes neoconservative groups. And I know that there are some religious groups like the Southern Baptists who want to have Jews in Israel to bring the apocalypse on. I've seen commercials on television. We'll fly a Jew to Israel from Russia with $500. So give me $500. Give us $500 and we're going to have the Jews go back to their homeland as the Bible said and whatever. And that all fits in with this like left behind scenarios and everything.
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
There are these Paulines, I'll call them. And I hate to call them Christians because I have to define them as different. But they really are. They're not Christian. I, of course, come from the position of a Unitarian Christian, which is really the correct way of looking at it. If you read the Bible in 90 days and follow it through from beginning to end and follow all the themes and follow what was said, you'll realize what I say is true. Whether you believe that or not, it's up to you. But, you know, I'm just telling you what I read. So anyway, and you better believe it. So, Mearsheimer and Stephen Walt wrote this book about the Israel Lobby and how they've influenced foreign policy to an extent which is not necessarily good for America. That's not saying that Jews are behind, that the Jews are so powerful that they're, that, you know, we have swayed foreign policy to help Israel at all options, regardless of how it benefits America. What it's saying is that there's an Israel lobby that has influence. I think I can read between the lines that it's mostly, I think, I haven't read the book, so I can't say for sure, but from what I heard, it's these people, like these Southern Baptist people, I say Southern Baptist because they're easy to pick on and they're big. They're the ones, and I should say all Southern Baptists because it really is a big thing, but I already talked about the Baptists before. Beauty and the Baptists. What real Baptists are and what these Southern Baptists have made a mockery of what Baptists are. But yeah, these, I don't know what to call them. The Paulines or whatever, I know who's involved with it. It's all that Left Behind people. And you have people like Kirk Cameron and that English guy who's really annoying. Joe G was listening to him on his radio during one of his trips on his show. Joe G, Bored Beyond Belief, listen to him. And on his trip across America, he's listening to this radio program. And it's this English guy, and he is he's one of these guys. He's part of the, you know, this Left Behind crap. So where am I? So, yeah. So, I don't know. Is the Israel lobby so – is what – are – the question is this. They bring the question up. Are we defending Israel without criticism? We're not being critical of Israel enough, maybe. I don't know. Are we blindly or just giving them a clean slate, saying you can do whatever you want and we will support you 100%, right? Is that right to do? That's what John Mearsheimer and Stephen Walt are suggesting. Abe Foxman calls them anti-Semitic. It shuts down the conversation, okay? If in America, we should be able to talk, you know, openly about things. We shouldn't be shut up. You know what I'm saying? I mean, does it need to be talked about? I think everything should be talked about. I don't think people are aware of what's going on. I mean, and that's not just the Israel lobby. It's any lobby in Washington. We should know what is really going on, you know? So that is what I'm saying. It's like, you know, my personal opinion about what I think of Israel, and as Israel lobby is apparently from this book, you know, it's a lot larger. It's not just Jewish people. It is these Christian people. And I shouldn't say Christian because I hate that, because I consider myself a Christian and I don't want to keep myself as far away from them as possible with their false theology, even though it's orthodox, meaning that it is received wisdom. It's historical continuity. It is a cultural thing, but it's wrong, because if you read the Bible in 90 days, you'll realize it is wrong. That's just my opinion, okay? And my opinion is right. So, anyway, this is ending up to be a long, long spiel, but there is... So Abe Foxman is a very complicated individual. He's a complicated character. You just can't say one thing or the other about him. And I have new respect for him in what he does. I think he, from what I've also read, I think he is a little bit power hungry. And I don't like that people can just automatically call somebody anti-Semitic to shut them up. Because when you call somebody anti-Semitic or equate positions as anti-Semitic, right, that really shuts down the conversation. It's like calling a person a racist, okay, or something horrible. When you equate them, it really shuts down the conversation. Okay? It's too easy to be dismissive, and it's wrong. Because I'm all for open conversation and support, you know? If somebody says something to me that I feel is really anti-Semitic, right? The thing is not to call them anti-Semitic. The thing is to look at their argument and dismantle their argument. Okay? It doesn't mean, just because you allow somebody to speak doesn't mean that you have to believe what they say. You can dismantle it. And that's what's important. It's important to dismantle. It's important to be critical about what people say and how they communicate things. Because it could very well be that the person didn't mean what they said, you know? Because we're all human. We all have tongues and they make mistakes. So anyway, that's what I have to say about the Anti-Defamation League and Abe Foxman and all the stuff that's been going on. So do your research, okay? And have yourself an egg cream or a celery soda while you're at it. I love those things. You see, I told you I'm part Jewish, like, you know, I'm 1/8 Jewish or whatever. And that's the Jewish part of me. I love celery soda.
Another 5-minute mystery. Anniversary party is going on at the Brown household around the corner. One of the guests, George Taylor, pauses while eating his dessert to say,
best lemon chiffon pie I've ever tasted, Mary.
Oh, really?
I wish my wife could do as well.
Oh, thank you.
Say, it doesn't look as if Sam is appreciating it much, though.
Goodness, dear, is my cooking that bad? Sam, your head's practically in your plate. I guess it's falling asleep every night, and I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
Sam, sit up. Oh, it's dreadful. I'd better shake him. Sam! Sam!
Great God, he's dead.
How do you do? I'm Sergeant Barker of the Homicide Division.
Oh.
He's one of my boys, Mike Grady. Where's the body?
In the dining room at the table. We didn't move him.
Mm-hmm. I might as well be comfortable, everybody. This'll take just a little while.
Dead, all right. Peaceful, too.
Who's Mrs. Sam Brown?
I am.
And do you mind telling me what happened?
I guess not, but I'm so shocked I don't know where to begin or what to tell you.
Well, you might as well begin by telling me what you served for dinner.
Well, we had soup first.
Soup? What kind?
Mushroom, then roast chicken, green peas, mashed potatoes, dessert, and coffee. But I don't see how this could mean anything.
Yeah, just routine, Mrs. Brown. Did Mr. Brown eat everything?
Yes, he did. He seemed to fall asleep over his coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tried to wake him, I found he'd had a heart attack.
Yeah. That'll be all for a few minutes, Mrs. Brown. We want to take a look around. Notice anything about this table, Mike?
No, Chief. I can't say as I do.
Yeah, neither do I. Let's look in this kitchen here. Yeah, an orderly person, isn't she? Stacked the dishes after each course.
Yes. And here's the silverware over here. Mm. Ah, look. Look, Chief. One of these soup spoons has turned black.
Black? Let me see it. And the only spoon that's tarnished, too. Well, I was beginning to think it was a heart attack or a perfect murder, but this silver soup spoon is evidence enough. Mrs. Brown?
Yes, Sergeant Barker?
I'm sorry to interrupt your little party, Mrs. Brown, but I'm sure your guests won't mind.
I don't understand.
You will, Mrs. Brown, you will. You see, you're under arrest for the murder of your husband.
Do you know why Sergeant Barker accused Mrs. Brown of murder? In a moment, we'll hear the solution. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Our story. Sergeant Barker, how do you know it was homicide?
Well, Mrs. Brown took careful pains to wash the soup pans and soup dishes before she served the rest of the meal.
Yes, I can see that.
But she forgot one thing, to wash the silver soup spoons. What she didn't realize was that an hour later, by the end of dinner, the spoon her husband had used to eat his toadstool soup would give her away. She didn't know that toadstools make silver turn black. Mrs. Brown almost committed the perfect murder, but she forgot to wash one spoon.
Neutral Tones by Thomas Hardy. We stood by a pond that afternoon, and the sun was white as though chidden of God, and a few leaves lay on the starving sod. They had fallen from an ash and were gray. Your eyes on me were as eyes that rove over tedious riddles of years ago, and some words played between us to and fro, on which lost the more by our love. The smile on your mouth was the deadest thing, alive enough to have strength to die, and a grin of bitterness swept thereby, like an ominous bird a wing. Since then, keen lessons that love deceives and rings with wrong have shaped to me your face and the God-cursed sun and a tree and a pond edged with grayish leaves.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
Mrs. Brown almost committed the perfect murder, but she forgot to wash one spoon.